My name is Cameron, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Cameron.
This is an open meeting of the Beacon Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institutions. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The Beacon Group insists on providing a safe and effective meeting place so all who wish to may recover from alcoholism. Therefore, we ask all attendees to foster a secure and welcoming environment, refraining from any behavior that may compromise another's safety. As our traditions remind us, our common welfare is paramount. Each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. For more information about safety in AA, see the AA safety card, and safety in AA, our common welfare. Please join me in the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Josh will read the steps.
I'm Josh, alcoholic.
Hey, Josh.
Hey, Josh.
Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
The format of this meeting is a two 10-minute speakers, followed by our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. All of our meetings are recorded and accessible on our website, beacongroupaa.com. We support AA's statement of unity and anonymity, and therefore ask all our speakers to identify by first name only and to refrain from using profanity, please. Tonight, our first 10-minute speaker is Skylar.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Skylar, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Skylar.
A little nervous, a little hot, but I'm really excited. I always love talking in front of a microphone. But my sobriety date is September 27th, 2018. I'm a sponsor. I have a home group. I'm active in AA. I'm active in my recovery. And these are the things that help me stay sober. My story starts, I grew up in an alcoholic household and always thought, you know, everything was very dysfunctional and was the oldest sibling. My parents had me really young, you know. And, you know, it's really funny because recently, typically I talk about, like, you know, the struggles of growing up with a young parent. And like how, you know, there's always was really a lot of difficulties practicing acceptance around my childhood and understanding, like, if things were different, I would be different. And really recently with, you know, as time has gone on and with acceptance and a lot of understanding of and context from like my family and my mom, and with the amends process, and really being able to have an understanding of what happened that's not just like a selfish, self-centered view of my upbringing. So a little background, a little bit of where I'm at. But my, you know, growing up, I was really close with my grandmother, who was also in sobriety. You know, she probably had around 5 years when I was born. So I was going to different AA meetings, you know, helping make the coffee, made the meeting about myself, very much loved it. And so I always knew about AA. I didn't know I necessarily needed to be a part of it. I didn't think that, I didn't understand it. Drinking really kind of, for me, didn't really start to take off until I was in high school. But before that, I was really depressed. I've been in the psych ward before, you know, in and out of like different, you know, living situations that weren't the best. And just really all around like a mental health crisis, just walking. So when I was able to find that I could escape my feelings or escape these feelings of like worthlessness through smoking weed or getting drunk, it really became like my number one solution. So, you know, really taking off, really having no grades, really having no values, no dreams. Everything was very much the result of other people's behavior. There was no accountability. And I hit my bottom pretty early. I started to feel the effects of alcohol starting in high school. I was becoming friends with people just because they had money or had opportunities to get alcohol. So I prioritized those friendships over like my actual friends. I had like two real, they held it down. And I just was like, I need better friends. Like, you aren't doing anything for me. And then that really kind of started my inability to not have any true meaningful friendships, because then I was prioritizing friends for the wrong reason. So, you know, starting in my junior year of high school, I was like, you know what, I gotta go to Al-Anon. We have some problems in the family. It's affecting my life. And so I went to Al-Anon, and I would always pregame the Al-Anon meeting, as many people do. And then it happened to me in this Al-Anon meeting that there are actual alcoholics that attend Al-Anon. So after like a little bit, after probably like a year of like coming in, like holding the meeting hostage, sharing for like 10 minutes, finally somebody like pulled me in the parking lot and was like, I think you might benefit from a different 12-step program. If you're interested, like meet me at this Tuesday night meeting. And I love attention. Like, if somebody thinks there's a specialized program for me, like, I'm gonna go. No matter how old I am, like, I don't really care. So I go to the Tuesday night meeting. I'm like 17, and I'm like, yeah, like I'm Skylar. I'm new. I'm like, I love it. I'm enjoying the people. Like, no concept that like I have a problem with alcohol. Just like there for the friends, there to socialize. And there was this really angry, like grouchy old man, and he like humbled me really quickly, because I was like all in the meeting, and he'd be like, shut up. Like, you have nothing to add here. Like, take the cotton out of your mouth, or your cotton out of your ears, and like put it in your mouth. And I was like, for somebody who wants me to like stick and stay, like this is not gonna do. But luckily, you know, there was a woman there, there was like maybe three women in the meeting, and they were all in like the somehow same sponsor lineage. And that really kind of started to take off, like, my ability to be like, there's, like, long-standing friendships here. There's, like, people around. I put it on the back burner, continued to burn down my life, barely got into college, and, like, kind of really started to get angry when I was drinking, starting to lash out. I grew up in an angry alcoholic household, and I was like, there might be some truth here. Really put it on the back burner. And then when I actually found out I was going to school, I was like, the summer before, I'll take it a little seriously. And then fast forward to burning my life to the ground in my first freshman year of college, nearly trying to kill my roommate, creating absolute havoc. And like, it wasn't until I started, I would go to a meeting a week that I liked. I liked the people there. I did not want to participate in any type of fellowship or any type of step work, like be for real. But Just to expedite a little bit more, you know, that person that was like my main point of contact in the meeting, she was like 47. I got a call that, you know, she was dying and that they knew I was close with her. And if I wanted to say goodbye, this is the hospital, feel free to come by. So it was just a revolving door of love of like everybody in the room that just adored this woman. And that moment I realized like there might be a place for me here because like the love in this program is real. For somebody that didn't understand that there could be anybody that would love you for no, like, what can I get from you? Nothing in return, just true, unconditional love. I decided to give this program a chance. So I went back to school, went to a meeting I'd never been to before. I went to a women's meeting. And I just, like, kind of said where I was at. I don't really know what to do. And then after the meeting, I went up to this woman. I loved her jeans. Thank God she had a program. And she took me through the steps. I met with her every Wednesday. She took me through the traditions. She told me the importance of being involved in service. And then after about a year and a half, COVID hit. And it was like such a whirlwind. I was like on this, like, I was cruising with my sobriety. I like loved AA. And I feel like Zoom really kind of was like where I was either gonna keep going or I was gonna fall off. And I decided to keep pushing forward. I was able to attend all my Zooms and I got my first sponsee. I felt like I gave birth and had a kid. I was like, somebody's sobriety is in my hands. And there was a lot going on. And then I realized like, it is so not about me. And it is so about me just sharing my experience, strength, and hope and helping somebody get better. And that really catapulted my sobriety. Later on, I moved. I lived in D.C. for a little bit. And then, you know, she ended up getting a different sponsor. We became best friends. I had my first friend. Like, one of the gifts, I think, of my sobriety is I didn't have a lot of young people where I got sober. So I wasn't able to hide out in fellowship. I really had to, like, commit to step work really early on. And about, like, in the middle of my sobriety, I was able to get friends and, like, be a part of. And, you know, midway through, I was finishing up college, and now with like a little bit of perspective, I ended up getting kicked out of my program. Story for another time, happy to talk about it. I have some humility around it, but I couldn't accept it, so like I'm moving to Boston early. I was always planning to move here, and then in 2021, I was able to move here and basically hiding out, and then I like really was able to like, it really was, wow. It was brand new. Meetings were only in like Emmanuel Church. I was able to meet a bunch of people, but it was hard because I always like I moved throughout my sobriety and like so, like having perspective, it was definitely some geographics in there. And it was really hard to connect. I was either like had a little bit of sobriety, so I wasn't really relating to everybody that was like brand new and like felt like people already had their friend group. So I had to do like a lot of soul searching. I had a lot going on and like my sobriety hit a wall. Fast forward, like I was on a medication like most of my life and then like couldn't take that anymore. I gained like 100 pounds in one, like 9 months, completely had lost my identity. I was like a cross-country runner, like things weren't working out the way I thought. And I was like, I have 3 years of sobriety. Like, I mean, what is going on? And it was when I was able to realize like life on life's terms, like it's really not about what I think my life should look like. And it really humbled me to go into the day of like, what can I do for my sobriety today? So now like I eat nourishing food. I don't need to be like going through like this eating disorder realm, or, you know, I don't have to go to like 7 meetings all in 1 week if I'm doing other things for my sobriety. Like I can check in, because there are days where, or weeks where I need 7 days of sobriety or AA meetings, but there's a lot going on. It's a tight 10, but I think I was able to get it all in. Thanks everyone for having me.
Thank you, Skylar. We will now observe the 7th tradition. AA has no dues or fees for AA membership, but we do have expenses. The 7th tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's expenses, the 7th tradition is essential at every level of AA service. Since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, GSO has withdrawn approximately $4.5 million from the reserve fund. AA's usual suggestion is a $2 contribution per meeting. We are passing the basket, but you may also observe the 7th tradition digitally on Venmo. There is a QR code in the basket, and our Venmo handle is beacon-group. Again, although there are no dues or fees for a membership, we do have expenses. Our rent is $400 per month. Please give what you can and see our treasurer, Megan, with any questions. We thank you in advance for your generosity. AA also has a set of traditions which apply to the group in the same manner that the 12 steps apply to the individual. Tonight, Dom has been asked to read the 12 traditions.
The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, since the AA name ought never be mounted to public harm persons. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you. Beacon Group is run by a business meeting, which meets on the third Wednesday of each month at 6:30 p.m. Eastern in a hybrid format.
We're going to meet tonight, right?
Tonight, yeah. 9 p.m. both here at St. Paul's Church and online. This is your opportunity to get more involved. All group members are encouraged to attend and participate. We hope you can join us. Will all group members please raise their hands? And now, let's welcome our second 10-minute speaker, Gabe C. Gabe.
Hey.
It's good to be here. We needed a meeting today. Crazy day. But yeah, December 3rd, 2011 is my sobriety date. This time around, I'll get into my relapse. But,
can you get closer to the mic?
Yes. Sorry. Kind of like an AA cape, kind of standard 12-step cape. December 3rd, 2011 is my sobriety date. The Newton Men's Group on Thursday night is my home group. We meet at 11 Homer Street in Newton at 8 o'clock. And yeah, today I'm sponsoring people. You know, I want to kind of check in on how I'm doing right now, because I think it's important to do. But I was talking to some folks before the meeting, like, you know, I've kind of had a hard time lately. I've had sort of like a resurgence of anxiety with, you know, life getting really busy again. I'm in this, you know, new job, you know, two kids, they're with me most of the time. I'm single, and it's sort of like there's a lot of demands that have sort of ramped up over the last year, and it really took me a while to kind of admit that I had to look at my own behavior to sort of improve my life. And that's, in some ways, it's sort of how my disease manifests itself today at 11 years sober. I have to check in and tell you I've been having a little bit of a tough time. It doesn't do me any good if I just come up here and sound great and you think I'm super sober or whatever. That's not helpful. What it's done is really helped me realize that, like, these are some of the defects of character that I have to deal with over time. And after 11 years, it's not so much about like, I might pick up a drink. It's about like, how free am I today? Like, how happy and joyous and free am I? Like, I'm not sober to be anxious and miserable and, you know, discontent. That's not why I got sober. But I will say that, is that better?
Do I need to be louder?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. I will say that AA really saved my life. I was a pretty early alcoholic. I went to my first detox at 16. I'm like a Jekyll and Hyde alcoholic. The person that you know today, like anybody that knows me, if I was to pick up a drink within probably a week, I'm like unrecognizable, right? To the point that it's scary for me, which is why I'm so embedded in AA today. You know, my routine in the program is really important. I sponsor several people. The number one thing we talk about is routine and, you know, the foundation of what my program looks like. And that means like morning prayer, reading the daily reflections, checking in on a gratitude list, calling the sponsor. You know how many meetings you're going to in a given week. And that doesn't change unless you have a really good reason why. And that's how I, you know, run my program today, because I'm pretty much terrified of a relapse, you know, to be honest, because relapse is a part of my story. But my alcoholism looked like a lot of justifiable anger. I had like what I thought was a pretty chaotic childhood, low income housing, single parent, in and out of foster care. When things leveled out, we moved around a lot, always the new kid, a lot of violence around the family and in my friend groups that I hung out with. And I think there was probably like some actual PTSD there, but again, like I'm gonna muscle through that and I'm just gonna drink and, you know, we'll figure it out later, like kind of mentality. And I had to be absolutely exhausted of any potential that I could continue to drink before I finally surrendered and found that like deep inner bottom that allowed me to come into AA and actually do it as it's laid out and to actually follow suggestions. Like my butt had to be fully kicked, right? And I came in, what happened was I came in, I was like 21. I got sober in Boston Young People's AA, which I still had a really soft spot for the Young People's AA because it's just, you know, fantastic for a younger person. And if one of my kids needed to get sober, I know exactly where I would send them. But what happened was I was like two-stepping. Like I kind of got sober, I got around the fellowship, and then I kind of got a life built up around me, and then I fizzled away from meetings, right? So I hadn't really gone through the transformation that I need to go through to stay sober, right? Like I really needed the steps, and I thought I was gonna be fine. Just, I got it, like I understood it. Like I could hear you and I could understand it, but I hadn't transformed inside, and that was something that had to happen for me to have the spiritual experience that I think is necessary for me to stay sober long term. Okay. And for me, spiritual is like anything selfless, right? And so the spiritual action that I take today primarily is sponsoring other guys and taking them through the work so that I'm perpetually going through the steps. Like that's how I stay sober. I have to be doing, at some point it has to just stop being all about me, right? Like not like, was this meeting good? Did I get what I wanted out of it? Like that can't be how I operate today at 11, you know, plus years sober. I have to be here to potentially pick up a new guy's phone number so I can get coffee with him later on, and maybe we go through the work, you know? One of the guys I sponsor just celebrated a year yesterday. That feels good. I've had another sponsee celebrate a year. We went through the 12 steps. Like, that's the light in like, the sunlight of the spirit that I want to be in is, like, I helped someone and didn't ask for anything in return, and I can just see them live a better life. Like that is really like the love that Skylar talked about that's available in this room. And that, you know, and I think that's what really sold me too. Like when I finally like accepted that this wasn't what I thought at first was gonna be
like a sales pitch to get me to go back to church, you know, like all the God stuff. Like I was force fed the Irish Catholicism growing up, like had to go to church every Sunday. Really didn't connect with it, didn't have a spiritual experience there. But, you know, the inner resource and me allowing me to kind of find my own conception of what a higher power is, and also looking at the evidence of how crazy my life was and that I was still okay, kind of gave me what I needed to do the work and to start to grow spiritually. So spiritual growth for me in regular meeting attendance and working with others are like the three tenets for me for long-term recovery to keep me motivated to keep coming to meetings. Again, like what I shared, I relapsed after 8.5 years because I got away from meetings. The stakes were high. I had 2 kids, I had a wife, I had a big job. And I, you know, we were talking before, this disease manufactured itself on me. And but because I got away from meetings, I thought I could drink again. And I did that, and it was absolute hell on earth. I was out there for 2 years. It was like drinking until 4 o'clock in the morning and having like hangover panic attacks on the red line going to work. It was absolute misery. And I got divorced in the middle of that and was drinking alone in my own place for the first time ever. And it was just, I can't tell you how hell on earth it was, okay? And that's what I remember. Like when I play the tape forward now and why I do what I just explained to you that I do it in my program, because I know if I get away from this, it'll manufacture itself again and there'll be a new story as to why I can drink again. Even though I've already lived through that hell, this disease is gonna tell me I can drink again. So I take that really seriously, and that's why I continue to show up at minimum, like my routine, my weekly routine has to be done. I mean, if you're new, like again, the problems and the anxiety I'm facing today is because my life is very big. Like I have a great relationship with my kids. I've got a good relationship with my ex-wife, if you can believe that. I've managed, you know, difficult family relationships through leveraging the tools in this program, and leaning on people in this program. And even most recently, like being in sales and like, you know, having anxiety, giving presentations similar to this for work and managing that through being honest and leaning into my program. That's how this program works. And I have not seen any scenario that you can't throw at AA and filter through the steps and the solution that we have. There's nothing you can't throw at this that we can't help you work through, right? And there's just so much hope in that. And I think with that, I'll just end. Thanks.
Thank you, Gabe. We encourage all attendees to participate fully in our meetings and to have a service position. If you would like to be of service, please see our job coordinator, Ramiro, after the meeting. And now let's welcome our main speaker, Julia.
Julia, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Julia.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Excellent. Amanda, thank you so much for asking me to speak here. It's been a while since I've been at this meeting, and I really enjoy it every time I come, and I don't know why I don't come more often, but and it's really an honor. I have to say, I've been the 10-minute speaker before, and now I feel like I must be really old or something. So I'm very honored. And you know, I did what I always do when I'm nervous, is I asked my higher power for help, and hopefully I'll say something tonight that can resonate with somebody and mean something to somebody. Because that's what it's all about. You know, I know when I first came in, I did not want to be here. And it, you know, when I came in for a little while, and I'll get to that in a minute, you know, with my mom, and I would listen to stories, and one day somebody said something that I was like, ugh. Like I thought I was going with her, and I heard something that was like, ugh, that's like me, and that kind of opened the door to me thinking, well, maybe I could be an alcoholic too. But, you know, I'll do, I also feel like when I speak, I will certainly get to the message, but I do feel like, and there's a newcomer in here, like, sometimes I think it's, again, I think it's important to hear what, you know, what got somebody here, what it was like, so, I'll do a little bit of that. My sobriety date is August 15th, 2008, and I've been very, very lucky to not have had a relapse. I've been lucky in a lot of ways, you know. I'm definitely one of those people that didn't have to go all the way down to the bottom. I'm a high bottom drunk. Although, if there was like a camera in my apartment or a lot more social media back in 2007, you know, maybe that you wouldn't have thought so. But because I did a lot of things that other people don't know about. Or if there was a camera in my mind, you know, but on the outside, sort of high bottom. But, you know, I'm one of those people that does come from an alcoholic family. Both of my parents are alcoholics, and 3 out of 4 of my grandparents are alcoholics. 2 of my grandparents died from this disease, one of whom choked on his own vomit in his sleep, and the other died from cirrhosis of the liver at 56 years old. I didn't even think about that until I was like 30. Like, it didn't even occur to me that that might be something. You know, and there are many people, like, you know, I don't happen to have any siblings who don't have alcohol problems, but I could. It's not necessarily hereditary. You know, and for me, when I look back at my family tree, like, as I was coming into AA, it was actually helpful because I had a lot of shame. I am somebody, I don't like to be wrong, I don't like to fail, and when I could say, well, you know what, maybe I'm not a failure, you know, maybe it's kind of like being a diabetic, like my Aunt Susan, she can't have cake, you know, I just can't drink, like, you know, other people in my tree. So to me, that's been helpful, but, you know, I grew up with these people. They divorced when I was really young, and I was mostly raised by my mom. It was a very 70s kind of divorce where you only saw your dad like every other weekend and on the week, you know, every other Wednesday and on the weekends, and I don't think we did Wednesdays. You know, and my mom, she was really great, but she was kind of like a rageaholic and a workaholic, and her alcoholism didn't look like other people's. She didn't drink a lot, she didn't drink at home, but when she drank, she had a personality change. Unlike me, it was a personality change for the better. And so when she decided to quit drinking when I was 14, I was kind of bummed. Because, you know, there goes the fun. But what was happening was, you know, I had actually had my first drink at 14. And, you know, to set up my kind of scenario of who I was, is I was like, I was this person, I was 4 going on 40, I was an early reader, I always thought I was right. I was an adult, I was an only child at that point. My dad remarried and had other kids, but, and, you know, I didn't like other kids, and I was like, I was an adult, and that was it. And we moved a lot, and I had trouble sometimes making new friends. And then when I was 14, I had these new friends. They were popular, and they were drinking in the woods, and I wanted to impress them. And I had like a babysitting while drinking incident, and that scared my mother enough to think that maybe she was a bad influence, and she went to AA. And dragged me with her, not because she thought I had a drinking problem, but because she just dragged me everywhere. And so I would go to these AA meetings in the Merrimack Valley of Massachusetts, and I was like, I liked hearing the stories, but I thought everyone was really pathetic. And the one like bumper sticker that just I couldn't get was "Let go and let God." I was like, oh my God, if you people would just get it together, you know what I mean, and stop letting go so much, maybe we wouldn't be in this situation. So, but, you know, I did not drink again. Like, after that incident, which was very humiliating, and I got caught doing something bad, I did not drink again until college. And in fact, I thought I learned so much about Alcoholics Anonymous by going to these meetings that I wrote my college essay all about Alcoholics Anonymous, and because I'm a smart person, I wrote how it impacted me personally. I got into every college I applied to, and, you know, I showed up at college, and, you know, in high school, I was kind of like, if anyone's ever seen the movie Election, with Reese Witherspoon, Rent It if you haven't, or wouldn't even rent things anymore, but, you know, I was like the president of everything, and I wanted to be the best, and I was going to get out of that school, but I didn't have, like, a boyfriend. Nobody noticed me in that way. I wasn't really popular.
I got to college and everything changed. Like, I dyed my hair, I got platform shoes, suddenly I had a boyfriend, I was popular, and I started drinking, and nothing happened. And I was like, obviously I'm not an alcoholic, because I heard at those podiums that I had my first drink and I was off and running. Like, I had my first drink and I burned my life to the ground, and I'm like, obviously I learned my lesson. For me, my alcoholism was a bit, it was tricky. And, you know, like, looking back on it, when I did my fourth step, there are things that happened between the ages of 18 and 23 that, you know, were definitely related to my alcoholism, but it wasn't until about 25 that I crossed this invisible line, and suddenly, and I love using these AA expressions now, like, I was a cucumber that turned into a pickle, and I could not go back to being a cucumber. And so what I mean by that is, you know, in the beginning, I could drink like other college girls. I really could, you know? Sure, like I got the spins, and maybe I said something a little embarrassing, but I only drank like once a week. And by the time I was in my mid-20s, it was every day. And it was often a blackout, always a brownout, always guilt, shame, and remorse. And, you know, and it was like, it was the glue that kept me together. And I was a person too, drugs are not a part of my story, I was really scared of drugs, but I was like, alcohol is like drugs, like I could just go, you know? But, and I didn't want to be like my mother, I didn't want to go to those meetings in Haverhill with people who didn't know how to dress, like, you know, and I just didn't want it to be, like I wanted to get married and have champagne at my wedding and all of that. I wanted to go to Napa. Well, when I went to Napa, because I lived in Los Angeles and that was where you went, I did embarrassing things, you know? There was no wedding, there was no boyfriend, like it wasn't happening, but you know, and I couldn't see it because I was in major denial, but I was an alcoholic, you know, I was an alcoholic because every time I drank, you could give me $10,000 and I wouldn't be able to tell you what was going to happen, you know, and that to me is like, I can remember that feeling, you know, I'm just going to get a sense of how close I am, okay, So basically for me, as I said, I didn't go all the way to the bottom. I thought I needed a DUI, like, in order to be told I had to, I thought somebody had to tell me, you have a drinking problem. Neither of these things happened, and for me, it was another AA expression that I know and love so well, an inside job. And, you know, what happened was in 2007, my mother, who was 19 years sober, she got diagnosed with lung cancer. And she hadn't smoked or drank in almost 20 years, and she got lung cancer. And so I came back, I had been living in Los Angeles, and I came back here and to take care of her, and unfortunately she passed away 3 months after she was diagnosed. And you know, I made a decision to stay here and not go back, and you know, what did I do? I drank. Like, I didn't know what else to do, you know? And I moved to Charlestown, where I was cute, and I had this condo, which I still have, and it had this patio, and I remember thinking, I'm just gonna drink on that patio, and then everyone's gonna know, because in LA, there's 10 million people, and I could have this double life there that nobody knew about. See, in LA, like, the other thing is, I didn't think I belonged here because I would always hear people say things like, oh, my drinking friends were so terrible, and like, I had amazing friends in LA, you know, they were great, and sure, maybe some of them are even alcoholics, I don't know. But, you know, what would happen is my friends, and I hear this a lot, they were getting married, they were slowing down, they were doing this, I was speeding up. Like, I was going to the bars, and then instead of bringing the party back to my house, I was going to after hours, I was doing dangerous things, and you know, these are the things that were happening to me, and this is what happened. Like, and I couldn't stop, I couldn't control it. So I, you know, was really nervous about being in Boston, this little provincial city. And so what happened was my last drink was I met a new friend, and we went to Tia's on a Tuesday night. And I'm relatively new to Boston, and I remember thinking, this girl is boring. Like, she wasn't drinking like me, not fast enough. And what happened to me was, when I would drink, and I didn't like it if people told me about the personality change, but I started to feel it, and it was like being the Incredible Hulk, and you know, like you could feel it happening, you can't turn it back, and you know, and all of a sudden I'm like, I'm really bored, and wow, that bartender's kind of hot, like he wasn't hot 5 minutes ago, but I knew that I had to go home, because I had to be safe, and like, that's crazy, you know what I mean?
And I ended up going home and buying more wine and drinking it until I passed out. And the next day I needed more wine. I needed it to get out, like to get through the morning. And to some people that's not that crazy, like if we're in AA, but to me that was a big deal. And I was, it led to also a big binge day and online shopping and, you know, buying Rod Stewart tickets twice. I mean, it's ridiculous. But that was my bottom. Like, that was my bottom. And I had way, like, more embarrassing things that I don't talk about in AA meetings. But that was it, because I was out of control. Like, I was scared. And so I went online. The internet was around in 2008, and I was able to find an AA meeting in Charlestown, and it was a women's meeting. Now, also, the time frame, it was 6 months after my mom had died. And I was really grieving her, and I did not believe in God. I'm still not really religious, I'm spiritual. But I walked into that meeting, and it was all women that were about the same age as my mother, with about the same amount of sobriety that she had, and I felt safe, and I felt at home. And, you know, it wasn't where I wanted to be, obviously, but I felt safe and protected. And these nice women, and I also was very stubborn. I didn't want to be told what to do. And I had this idea, oh God, they're gonna make me get a sponsor, and they're gonna make me like do things I don't want to do. And none of them did that. In Charlestown, nobody is shoving a big book down your throat. They're just like, hi honey, do you want to have another coffee? Like, come to another meeting. And so I just went to another meeting, and nobody told me what to do. Nobody was like, so I just started going to meetings. And you know, and it was great. I had just moved to this town. I didn't know anybody. So that was the other thing. In LA, I was like, what if I meet my bartender at an AA meeting? Like, then I won't be able to go to that bar again. But I didn't have to worry about that. And I would, you know, and I really enjoyed, like, getting my chips, and it felt great. And then I wasn't, you know, I knew where I parked the car. I wasn't, you know, getting bruises. And, you know, my life had become so small that I was terrified of getting a DUI. And so I had a family friend who lived in Beverly, and I had to, if I went to her house, it was a sleepover. Like, there was no driving home. I just, because, and that was how I had to live my life like that, you know? The way that sobriety looked for me at first was that, like I said, I just kind of followed people from meeting to meeting to meeting. And what I loved about the meetings in Charlestown, like, I think I'm very smart, like, I'm this great intellectual, but then it was simple. It was these simple slogans that I just couldn't complicate, like, you know, easy does it, you know, first things first, like one day at a time, and I could do that, and I wasn't failing at it. And eventually, I got a year, you know, literally just by doing that. I did not get a sponsor. I'm not saying this is the right way to do it, but I didn't, because I didn't want anyone telling me what to do. And I at about a year and a half sober, I love this expression that I learned in Charlestown, which was I was living dirty. I wasn't shoplifting or selling drugs, but I was, like, you know, dating the wrong men type of thing or whatever. I was just not living I wasn't the worst, but I wasn't great. And I didn't feel good about it and didn't have a sponsor. And people were like, go to the Monday night women's meeting on Newbury Street. You'll find a sponsor there. So I went, and this woman spoke, and I had these high standards for, I wanted a woman who was, well, everyone said, go, like, look for someone who has what you want. I wanted someone with long-term sobriety who was super successful, like, in her life, and there she was. Her name is Susan, and she was 13 years sober, and I didn't think she would be available, but she was, and as it turns out, she has the same birthday as my mother. And to me, that was like one of those, because I'm, you know, my mother is like, was my beacon, you know? And she gently and softly took me through the steps. And, you know, I really genuinely thought, like, I knew there was something that was going to happen with these steps because I'd heard people talk about it enough times. But I genuinely kind of thought that, you know, it was really the drinking that's the problem. Like, I'm pretty awesome. Like, I run marathons, I send thank you notes. Like, other than the drinking, I'm pretty great. But doing the steps allowed me to see my own, you know, to be, like, actually take an honest look at myself and, you know, and realize that I am selfish and self-seeking. Like, my first thought is me, even to this day. And I've been able to learn how to change, you know. Sometimes I have to set reminders to ask someone how they are. you know? And like, that's okay. And over time, practice has made me a little bit better. And you know, I got to understand with her help the, you know, how my my concept of a higher power. And it was, you know, I went through, you know, all of those steps with her. I was able to make some amends to the best of my ability at that time. And you know, I'm a person who I didn't believe that I was ready to sponsor people until I felt like really solid. And so I didn't sponsor anyone until I was about 4 years sober. And I will say that, you know, to my, like, I love that this is the way my story is so far, is that that first person I still sponsor today. You know, there's been many others that have come and gone, you know, over time, and I've, you know, I've got my OG, and, you know, and that began a whole other phase of recovery. I'm sure anyone who's ever had the pleasure of working with another person, and it's been spoken about here tonight, I mean, that just opened it up. And it wasn't that I was completely taking from AA, because I truly believe that, that, you know, just sitting in a seat, I really truly believe that that is service. You know, obviously making the coffee, a lot of the things that happen in this meeting, you know, making sure the doors are open, that is service. But being able to have that transmission line from one alcoholic to another, I was able to give, and I still can, or even just be a listening ear in the way that my sponsor is for me, you know, and let somebody know that, that, you know, it's going to be okay. I've been there too, you know, and if I don't have an answer, I know other people who do, and I can point them in that direction. When I was 6.5 years sober, I got fired from a job for not being good enough. That had never happened to me in my life. You know, I have one of my biggest fears is financial insecurity. I have a pretty decent sized ego that I try to curb with, you know, learning how to embrace humility, which is a, you know, a lesson for me. And I was fired, and it was devastating. And what I did, because I had a little bit of sobriety, is I doubled down on AA. Like, I just started, I mean, it was like the rug was pulled up from underneath me. All my fears were realized at once. Not being good enough, not having an income. And I started going to like 2 meetings a day, ones I never went to. I was talking about everything all the time, getting numbers of women who I admired, like doing all of it. And it got me through it. You know, and like, again, I am spiritual, not religious. I got 2 new sponsees in that time frame. Their sobriety date, I kid you not, is the day I was fired. Like, weird, right? One of them I still sponsor today. So, you know, I was able to get through that. When I was a year and a half later, I was in a relationship with somebody, and he relapsed in a really big way. And it was devastating, like really, really devastating. In fact, we were in Palm Springs, and he relapsed, like in Palm Springs. And I was an hour and a half away from LA, where all my friends were, where we'd be visiting. And all I knew how to do when I realized this, and it was a drug relapse, 6 o'clock in the morning, was I've got to go to a meeting. And I went to a meeting in Palm Springs at 7 in the morning, and I shared what happened. And this man said to me, he shared in the meeting, and he said, "We all have our turn in the barrel, and this is your turn in the barrel, and now it's our job to carry you." And these people, they took me to breakfast, they got me through it, like, got home. And then my AA family here, you know, got me through that really difficult period. And I will say this too, you know, being sober and having access to a higher power, and, you know, and the tools of the program, whether it's going to meetings or talking to a sponsor or working with a sponsee, you know, I will say that breakup and that whole kind of situation was excruciatingly painful. And it wasn't less painful than situations like that when I was drinking, but it lasted a way shorter period of time. It was over within a few months, you know, and I was able to move on and grow. So when I was 10 years sober, I really was kind of stuck. I had really lost my connection to my higher power. I was doing a bunch of two-stepping, you know, I got really busy. And I had resisted something called Big Book Step Study, which some people may have heard of, and I thought, I was like, I'm not doing that. But then I knew it was kind of intense. Anyway, I did it. I like sucked it up and I did it, and I didn't speak at meetings for a while, and it was amazing, and it shifted me. You know, for me, I always have to keep moving. Like, I have to keep doing something, you know? And if that might not be the right thing for you, I'm not honestly as actively involved in it as I was, but it helped me to dig deeper, do more, you know? Another thing I do is I am involved in service at the sort of like, you know, below the group level, so I get involved in area stuff, and I'm a big nerd, so I love that, you know, not for everybody. But that keeps me connected. You know, we went a couple of years ago, about 5 years ago, I met somebody in the program. Turns out we went to high school together, that horrible high school that I did my best to run away from. He was a year older than me, and while I was doing theater, he was in the welding department. I didn't know we had one. And now I never got to have children of my own, but now I'm helping to raise his former wife passed away, and now I'm co-parenting 12-year-old twins, you know? And I get to do that sober, you know? And I always worried that maybe I would be that rageaholic mother. Like, loved her to death. As many of you who have close relationships with parents can, you know, it's complicated, right? And I'm not. Like, there's some miracle where I through some miracle of AA, like, I don't yell and scream at these kids, and I'm able to handle things. And, you know, Brian and I, my partner, were talking tonight, and I was talking him through the situation, and something that I remember hearing, and I wanted so badly when I came in here, when I would hear people talk about it, was this concept of wearing life like a loose garment. You know, and that wasn't how I was before I got sober. Like, I was, and somebody kind of mentioned, like, gutting it out. Like, that was it, you know. I was an only child, a single parent, didn't have a lot of money, but I was going to make it, you know. I was going to make it out of that small town. I was going to get through college. I was going to, you know, and I didn't even know about, why would you want to let go when, like, and let God or let the higher power when you could just do it all? And now I don't have to do that. You know, I've learned, with the help of a sponsor, with, you know, by going through the steps twice, maybe I'll go through them again. You know what I mean? Like, if I find it helpful, it might be good. I might need that kind of intensive work. You know, as somebody else mentioned as well tonight, going through the steps with others really helps me too. You know, it reminds me of these things that I, you know, that I may not be remembering on a daily basis. But, you know, today I'm able to take that deep breath, and, you know, there's a lot of things in my life that are really, it's funny, up until 4 years ago, my life was completely the same. I lived in the same condo that I was, like, drinking in the morning in. I had the same cat for, like, 21 years. Like, everything was the same, and then suddenly everything's different. You know, now we live in Andover, and which is next door to North Andover, where I grew up. And, you know, now there's children and a different cat and a different job and a bigger job, and, you know, and I'm able to handle it all, and it's unbelievable to be able to walk through life sober. Today, one of the reasons I'm wearing this fabulous dress, which I did wear partially for all of you because I know that we like to look nice at this meeting, but also at a work function, and it was like practically open bar and the whole thing. And, you know, I'll be honest, it was there was a point at which it was 3 hours and during the day drinking, and, you know, I'm an outgoing person, as you can probably tell, but I wasn't able to kind of bond. Like, everybody I could tell was starting to bond. They were in that good part, you know, that happens before the bad part. And I couldn't be there. And so I left, you know, I snuck out. And I, you know, there's a part of me that's like, I wish I could have bonded. But then again, we pretty much all work remote, so it's not like we're gonna become all best friends. And I'm also old, so it's fun. But, you know, I'm so grateful that I don't have to wake up tomorrow and wonder about what I did, you know, what I said. I am an alcoholic, so I might wake up that way anyway. But, you know, I can take a deep breath. I can ask God for help. I can log on to my home group, which these days is the Sahara Sunrise, which is Zoom only. At the moment, but it is a wonderful meeting that's at 7:30 every single morning, 7 days a week. I'll give you the login if you like it. And it's gotten us through, you know, really through COVID and beyond. I can connect with my people, I can talk to my sponsor, I can be there for my sponsees when they call me, you know, I can write a gratitude list, you know, I can, I have literature that I can rely on, and I don't have to be that same person I was before that was just gutting through life, you know, and just trying to get through it, and just filled with ego and not able to, you know, really appreciate the joy of living and the calm that comes and the serenity that truly comes from you know, being able to not only be sober but be like in recovery. So I think I'm reaching the end of my time. I'm sweating like you can't even believe this dress is covering a lot. But I really appreciate being able to be here, and I hope everyone has a great night.
Thank you.